Welcome to EDUCAUSE Now. EDUCAUSE Now is sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting, providing management and IT consulting services to higher education and business clients across the U.S. MoranTechnology.com. I'm Jerry Bain for EDUCAUSE, and on this edition of EDUCAUSE Now, we bring you a conversation with Cable Green, Director of Global Learning for Creative Commons. We also talk to Sally Jackson and Michael Wesch about collaboration in teaching and learning.
There's a lot of credible evidence that collaborative learning produces more understanding of subject matter than learning that students do individually.
That's Sally Jackson, communications professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, sharing her thoughts on collaboration in the classroom. The use of collaboration in teaching and learning environments is rapidly becoming one of the foundations for 21st century learning. The path for getting students to collaborate isn't always clear, but the importance of this interaction is being stressed more and more to prepare students for today's job market.
Increasingly, we are hearing that 21st century work across all kinds of industries requires that college graduates be ready to enter into collaborations of all kinds, collaborations that cut across organizational boundaries, across distance, across subject matter. So I think that we are seeing increased reliance on collaboration as a tool for learning.
The easiest types of collaboration are actually not collaboration, they're just sharing.
Michael Wesch is Associate Professor of Cultural Anthropology at Kansas State University.
You get on Flickr and you upload some photos and you tag it with a certain tag. Say you're interested in bicycling. So you upload a bunch of stuff and you tag it bicycling. And then you look at the tag bicycling on Flickr, and there's just thousands and thousands of photos there. And in a way, you've collaborated with other people to create this pool of photos. But that's actually a very simple form of collaboration. It's simple sharing, right? At a slightly higher level, you'd have something like Wikipedia, where lots of individuals are contributing material. But this time, the material you're contributing is actually affecting other people's material. And that leads to a necessity of true collaboration. Like, you actually have to interact with people in some way. It'll be mediated in some way. And then at the top level, the most difficult level, you have community action. Essentially, you have like people actually coming together with a common purpose and doing something.
So learning how to work across your own subject matter, work with people who are different from yourself, that's what we want to do. And setting tasks that are not just an individual kind of assignment that's performed by a team, but really creating tasks that depend on diverse kinds of expertise. That's how you can encourage students to collaborate and to learn the skills of collaboration.
I have this problem in my intro class. You're trying to find something that's just hard enough that you really have to collaborate, just complex enough that you really have to collaborate to do a good job. And at the same time, you're working with intro students, so it can't be so hard that it's discouraging and then they just let it go. And that's a really hard sweet spot to hit. But that sweet spot is important at all scales, like all the way up to people trying to solve the climate crisis.
So what do we teach students about collaboration? According to Sally Jackson, it's important to teach them the entire range of collaboration skills.
Everything from analyzing the task to realizing that it needs collaboration, to recruiting team members who can supply the pieces of expertise that are needed, to managing the solution, all the way from conception to the delivery of an answer.
So in the classroom, I think we're always sort of gearing towards that top level, right? This community action thing where everybody feels like they're part of something. We're driving towards a purpose. But my own teaching experience has told me that if you start with the easy stuff, like the sort of sharing part, you can actually build the collaboration and community from there. So one example of this would be Jim Groom's DS-106. On there, you know, every day there's a new assignment that's actually contributed by the students. And the assignment is usually something like, take a picture of something you love, or take a picture of something that's typically ugly, and make it heartbreakingly beautiful. And then people take all these photos and they tag them on Flickr and they just all appear on this one page. The upshot of this is that not only are students doing creative acts on a daily basis, the real upshot is that community is being formed. People are starting to see, like, oh, that person always does really cool things. Like, oh, that person's interested in the same things I am, because they're seeing all this creativity from each other coming out. So now you have sort of the fertile ground on which a more complex collaboration can emerge.
One of the assignments that I developed just this year that I really like is sending students to look at published research done by teams, and then to research the members of the teams and try to understand what each person brought to the table. And then I ask the students to reflect on what their own strengths are, what their preparation up to now has been, and what kind of training they're still planning to get, and to write something imaginative as though they had been a contributor to a project, what it was that they brought to the table.
The tools for collaboration are as wide and varied as the collaborations themselves. Social networking, wikis, Google Plus Hangouts, and more.
Every faculty member should be expected to choose collaboration platforms that are important to the field that they're working in. So if there's a long-lasting collaboration platform in their field, part of their instructional agenda should be teaching the students how to enter that and how to competently work within that platform. And likewise, students should be encouraged to use whatever tools they like to self-organize for teamwork. So if they want to use Facebook to coordinate their work, they should be allowed to do that and not assigned to do work within, say, the wiki inside of the course management system. If we want to produce graduates who are collaboration ready, we should also take some pains to make sure that they experiment with a variety of platforms and a variety of tools, and that they encounter a lot of different kinds of problems in collaboration so that they build up a store of experiences and solutions and points of view.
Sally Jackson is a communications professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and Michael Wesch is associate professor of cultural anthropology at Kansas State University.
Register now for the ELI 2012 online Spring Focus Session on Learning Analytics and join the discussion on this emergent and rapidly expanding topic within the higher education community. Learn more at educause.edu/ELI124.
Open Education Week is taking place March 5th through the 10th online and in locally hosted events around the world. To celebrate, we present a conversation with Cable Green, Director of Global Learning for Creative Commons. He's interviewed here by Lindsay Matz, Educational Technologist from the William Mitchell College of Law.
As the Director of Global Learning at Creative Commons, you've been tasked with setting strategic direction and priorities to build a global movement that will enable robust and vibrant practices and policies for free sharing of education and learning assets. Could you talk about some of the strategies you've been working on?
I certainly can. We've been doing several things. Probably the most important thing that I'm working on right now would be called open policy. And the basic idea is that when public funds are used to produce something, in this case educational materials, that they're freely and openly available. So let me be clear about what I mean by that. Let's say that the U.S. federal government gives out a grant through the National Science Foundation, for example, and it's public taxpayer money that is the funds that are making up that grant, and they go to a particular university. This public policy would say, because you took public funds, whatever you produce, the data, the research, the textbooks, the courses, the program, whatever it is you built, that you need to not only share it at no cost, but moreover, there needs to be an open Creative Commons license on that thing. And the reason that the license is so important is that somebody else might want to reuse that and have the legal rights to do so. They might want to revise it, meaning change it in some way. They might want to remix it, so take some of this and some of that program over there and make something new. And then they might want to redistribute it and share it forward with somebody else. And so the idea of open policy is being really tested right now in a big way in the Department of Labor TACT grant. The idea there is that there's $2 billion available to community colleges in the form of grants for building new programs to help people that are out of work due to outsourcing, international outsourcing, and or, as we all know, we're in a very difficult economic position right now, and a lot of people are out of work, and a lot of those folks go to community colleges. So the important thing about this grant from an open policy standpoint is that the Creative Commons Attribution License is a requirement of the grant. So if you take that public funds, you agree to share everything you produce. So that's one thing we're working on, and not just in the United States. This is happening globally. And in fact, the United States is not out in front on this one. Brazil right now has legislation working its way through its legislative process, a very broad open policy that one of the things it says is that if you're paid by the Brazilian government, the things that you produce will have an open license on them. The country of Poland is working on open licensing policy, et cetera. So this is a very interesting thing that's going on because you can imagine as educators, we are very interested in getting our hands on the tens of billions of dollars of educational resources that are produced. Two more things that we're doing real quick. One is to try to make search and discovery of open educational resources easier than it is today. So we're working with the three big search engines, with Google, Bing, and Yahoo, and their schema.org project. And we're running something called the Learning Resource Metadata Initiative, or LRMI. So if you go to CC/LRMI, just type that into Google, it'll take you right to it. And the idea there is to come up with some very simple education metadata so that people can tag their educational resources and have them easily found. And one of the reasons Creative Commons and the open community is so excited about this opportunity is we're looking forward to being able to both tag by license and search by license. So if what you're looking for is the ability to get something that's not only no cost, but also that you have the legal rights to modify and make it better, it's important to be able to search by that. And then we are working with education vendors to have them incorporate Creative Commons licensing into the creation process. So Blackboard made a big announcement. As you are working on your Blackboard course, there's now a button that says, I'd like to share my course, and you'll share it under a Creative Commons license. And not only will the license be attached to the course, but they've got open technical formats. They've got a Common Course cartridge export so that somebody who doesn't use Blackboard somewhere else in the world can also ingest your course and use it. So those are just a few of the things we're working on.
So what do you think the keys are for ensuring that the OER effort is successful and has an impact on student learning?
So I think one of the big issues here is sustainability. Oftentimes people will say, well, how are we going to afford that? That was a nice project, what you did with the Open Course Library, but come on, you spent $1.5 million building those courses. The economy's down. Who's going to pay to keep that up to date? And so I think what's really important about thinking properly about sustainability is how you frame it. So if you frame it that way, if you say it was a pilot project and it was this one-off thing and now we're going to get back to the way that we just do things, then yeah, it's going to fail, right? Nobody's going to keep funding that thing. If, on the other hand, you think about it the way we did in Washington State, which was to say we didn't talk about the Open Course Library like it was some big OER project. We said, redesigning the highest enrolled courses for the Washington Community Technical Colleges and the 500,000 students that we serve is a good idea. It's a good idea to update the curriculum, to make it current. It's a good idea to bring in expert resources from other places in the world that have great resources. It's a good idea to leverage technologies to help people learn in new ways. And we would do that even if open educational resources didn't exist. And not only would we build it, but it would make sense to maintain it in our core budget. So if it's part of your core activities, then kind of by definition, sustainability is not an issue. As long as you exist and you're a learning institution, you should be building and maintaining high quality learning resources. If you're not doing that, frankly, you shouldn't be an educational institution. So we said, look, this is just part of what we're supposed to be doing. By the way, we are going to throw a Creative Commons attribution license on all of our courses because of two big reasons. One, we believe that part of teaching is sharing, and we frankly believe that this content is not what, it doesn't give our educational institutions a competitive advantage. Content is commodity. You can get it anywhere. More and more people are giving it away. And so we're going to go ahead and share as well to add to the commons. But most importantly, we're going to share because we're selfish. So we believe that if we put a Creative Commons license on it, somebody out there in the world who's smarter than us is going to find errors in our courses. And because there's an open license on it, odds are they'll fix those errors before they use it. And just maybe, and this actually happened a couple months ago, I was in Brazil and I was meeting with the community colleges and they said, what are you up to? And I said, well, we got this open course library and it's got a Creative Commons license on it and it's all yours if you'd like it. And they said, really? We can have it? And I said, absolutely. And they said, great, we're gonna take it, do a quality review of it, update it to meet our needs, our local needs, and we're going to translate it into Portuguese. And I said, that's interesting. Would you be willing to give us back a copy of the updated courses in Portuguese? And they said, absolutely, and in English as well. And so by sharing, you're able to leverage this global labor force of people who have common needs and are willing to contribute at no cost, and we yield tremendous benefits in the process. So I think that's the biggest challenge, but it's also the easiest thing to solve if we simply think about it in the right way.
Cable Green is Director of Global Learning for Creative Commons. If you'd like to find out more about Open Education Week or any of the stories and people you hear about on the podcast, visit our show notes at www.educause.edu/now. EduCause Now is sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting. I'm Jerry Bain for EduCause. Thanks for listening.